This feature of the Science News Radio Network is coming to you from our studios in Dallas, Texas. Science News is on the air right now.
This is the promise of tomorrow, where people and industry keep up with the business of emerging and nanotechnologies. The fields covered in this series of programs will include energy, defense, aerospace, medicine, semiconductors, and more. For the next hour, Colonel Mason will introduce his experts, and you'll be on the cutting edge of the promise of tomorrow.
And yes, it is so good to be with you once again as we explore the exciting world of the business of emerging science, open innovation, nanotechnology. And yes, we have a nanotechnology program today. Dr. Jin Liu, Assistant Professor of Pharmaceutical Sciences at the North Texas System College of Pharmacy and the North Texas Health Science Center, is going to be telling us how to use nanotechnology in editing the human genome. Dr. Liu is going to be a speaker at the IEEE Metrocon conference going on October 26th. You can find out more about that conference at our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz. And of course, we're going to visit the Den of Strangers, get more wisdom a lot of us never heard of, and our fountain of useless information we keep here on the set. And of course, at the end of the program, listener comments and the voice of reason. A little more on that Metrocon conference. Oh, I forgot to mention Dr. Dashwin Feng is going to join us in the second half. This is from that very fun breakfast meeting we had with him a while back. It was a long breakfast meeting. We got a lot of material from Dr. Feng, author, lecturer, professor at Macau University. And the breakfast was a little noisy, but we managed to filter out a lot of the noise, and I think you're going to really enjoy that. So, an exciting show today. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to the Science News Radio Network special presentation, Promise of Tomorrow, with Colonel Mason. Those of you listening on radio can also hear us commercial-free online anytime, webcast, at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Well, today we have a fascinating guest, Dr. Jin Liu. She's the Assistant Professor of Pharmaceutical Sciences at the University of North Texas System of College of Pharmacy and the University of North Texas Health Science Center. And she's going to be speaking at Metrocon, the big scientific conference going on the 26th of October. You can find more about Metrocon at our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz. On the right-hand side of your screen, you will see a link. But now, let's get a preview of what Dr. Liu is going to be telling us, because she has some really fascinating stuff. Welcome to the program, Dr. Liu.
Hello. First, thank you for having me in your program. I'm very glad to be here to give you a preview of my presentation at the conference. So, for my presentation, I will cover three topics, using computational techniques to study biological problems. The first one is a drug discovery project that I collaborate with researchers at our own university and the University of Pennsylvania. We're targeting a protein called dopamine-3 receptor to design drugs for treatment of Parkinson's disease and drug addiction. The second project is a protein engineering project for genome editing. We're improving a technology called CRISPR-Cas9 to make it more specific so that it could be applied in clinical use for treatment of genetic diseases. And the third project I will discuss is development of a new drug discovery method with the help of artificial intelligence. So this project is still at its beginning stage, but I am very excited about it. I'm very excited about it because it has the potential to shift the paradigm of drug discovery. So all of these projects are very exciting projects.
Absolutely. I was looking over your abstract, and I see that you lead off with earth-shaking statement that drug discovery has reached its bottleneck, and to bring new drugs to market, the average cost right now is $2.6 billion, and it takes at least 10 years on average, but your computer-aided drug discovery methods have been proven to significantly reduce the cost of drug discovery. Is that, and you want to explain to us what computational microscope, what it is. Is that what you're using in this method?
Yes, that is what we use in this method. You know, in traditional experiments, people use a microscope to observe small particles. But in reality, we would like to observe how drug molecules interact with their target proteins. But currently, there's no such microscope available to reach this kind of a resolution. So we are using computers, the supercomputers, to simulate such interactions. So we call it a computational microscope. And if we could observe how drug molecules work at the molecular level, we could use supercomputers to design better drug candidates, and this could dramatically reduce the drug discovery cost and save the time and the money in the drug discovery.
Is this what we would also know as atomic force microscopes?
No, that's a different microscope. Atomic force is still an experimental microscope, but our microscope is using computers to simulate the interactions rather than directly observe the interactions.
So do you work at the nanotechnology level with these things, or am I way off base there?
Yes, nano level, and even, you know, even smaller than the nano level.
Wow.
Working at the astro level.
You can get smaller than the nano level? I didn't know you could do that.
Yeah, we can get smaller than the nano level because we're observing each atom rather than, you know, observe the whole molecule at the nano level. We're observing each atom and to simulate how atoms moving.
And this is all with the aid of a computer. So you're not actually observing. You're observing a screen that is being analyzed by a computational microscope.
Yes, yes. Actually, we are developing a force field. And the force field could simulate the physical interactions between the atoms. So we can observe how the molecules are moving. And this simulation has become so real, and we have successfully predicted many experimental results based on our simulations.
All right, and Parkinson's disease is one of the main reasons that you're doing this, to be able to alleviate or somehow cure Parkinson's disease, and which incidentally, I'm told, is Parkinson's is related to a lot of similar type diseases and things. So there could be some great strides made in with this method.
Yes, yes, definitely. So for the Parkinson's disease, we are targeting a receptor called the dopamine 3 receptor, and our D3 receptor. So, you know, in our brain, there's a chemical called dopamine, and dopamine is a chemical that is very important for us to have a feeling of happiness.
Mm-hmm.
So dopamine interacts with its receptor to give us this feeling of happiness. But for patients of Parkinson's disease, there's not enough dopamine. So we want to design some drugs to activate its receptor, just as dopamine could activate its receptor. And also, you know, for the same receptor, for people who are addicted to drugs, they generated too much dopamine when they use drug, so that when they use drug, they can feel happiness. So we would like to inhibit the same receptor so that people who are using drugs don't feel happiness when they use drugs, so they could no longer get addicted to drugs. So actually, we're targeting this one target to try to find molecules that could activate this receptor or inhibit this receptor, so that we can design drugs for two different diseases or disorders.
So really, to do these things, you're actually manipulating the human genome. Is that correct? You're using this CRISPR-Cas9 engineering. I guess CRISPR is all caps, CRISPR-Cas9, and 9. Can you tell me what is that an acronym for?
Yeah, that is a very long name, actually. And actually, what you need to remember is that it's actually a name for a powerful tool for genome editing. And this tool, CRISPR-Cas9, was originally used by bacteria for immunity defense. But just about 5 years ago, CRISPR-Cas9 has been developed as a new powerful tool for genome editing. Currently it has been used in basic biological research, but it holds, you know, great potential to cure all genetic diseases, all genetic disorders. These diseases could involve cancer, heart disease, diabetes, high cholesterol, and many other diseases that you can think of. So the potential of this technology is very high, but currently it is still not used in clinical settings. There are several reasons for that, and the most important reason is safety. So just imagine, you know, a doctor is trying to use this technology to correct a patient with cancer, and the doctor tries to correct the gene that has the cancer mutation. But if the technology is not precise enough, so the doctor could mistakenly correct the wrong gene. So if the doctor corrects the wrong gene, what could happen? So it's possible that a doctor could introduce either a new disease, or kill the patients, or even, you know, create a monster like many sci-fi movies. Yeah, so our research is to try to increase the precision of this technology with the help of supercomputers. So what we did is that we used a supercomputer to simulate this protein, so that we can get the active structure of this protein, so that this active structure is not available using all the other experimental technologies, and only our simulations could generate this first active state structure of CRISPR-Cas9. And based on this structure, we could design strategies to increase the specificity of this technology to make this genome editing technology more precise.
So the whole method could be dangerous if it wasn't done absolutely correctly, and you identified the correct genome, and for that you have to have artificial intelligence and other things, and all this stuff right now is in the experimental stage because of the dangers involved, and then, but how close are we, or you, to being able to say, hey, this is foolproof, and this is something we need to do?
Well, it still has a long way to go. So it has been a lot of discussions about the safety issue about using genome editing. Actually, the National Institute of Health, NIH, has issued a regulation to prohibit the studies involving genome editing of human embryos. But, you know, this regulation is not global. Some Chinese scientists have already published some studies using human, editing human embryos. So right now it is still an ethical issue, and I think we need global collaborations to make sure the safely development of this very promising technology.
But you seem to think within the next 5 or 10 years there can be great strides with these methods, is that right?
Yeah. I think in the next 5 or 10 years there could be a great stride. Actually, you know, a lot of patients are waiting for this technology. Just a few months ago, after we just published our first breakthrough paper in this field, I received a few emails from patients, and there was an email from a grandfather, and his grandson has a genetic disease. He asked me, you know, when could you bring this technology to clinical use, because my grandson could not wait. So there's an urgent need for this technology to be used in clinical use. But as we discussed before, safety issue is one issue to prevent it to be used in clinical. And also, there are other issues, including like its efficiency and how it could be delivered to its target site. And several issues have to be solved before it can be moved to the clinical application. So we still have a long way to go.
Well, your studies have been international. I noticed that you were trained in a Bachelor of Science degree in chemistry from Peking University in Beijing, China. And I want to ask you more about that, too, in just a minute. But and then, of course, you were have been educated stateside and currently with the North Texas System of College of Pharmacy and the North Texas Health Science Center. So you're pretty universal. But is there one country that is more in the lead with these methods you're talking about? Is it the United States or China or Europe or where?
I think, you know, the whole world is trying to develop this field and trying to take the lead. I think United States is currently taking the lead, definitely, no problem. But I also noticed quite a lot of scientific papers coming from European countries, such as Germany. And also, I know Chinese governments right now are putting a lot of efforts in this field and make this field as their top priorities for, you know, its technology development. So I wouldn't be surprised to see China developing very fast in this field in the near future.
Well, do you collaborate with the German researchers on this and people in China? Do you get back to Beijing once in a while?
Yes, actually, we are having global collaborations with many people. So I many researchers in the United States, and I also collaborate with people in China as well. So I usually visit China every year or every other year, and I go to conference and global conferences. People can discuss the development in the field.
Fascinating. Now, I want to get back to the question I had for you. You were educated at Peking University, P-E-K-I-N-G University, in Beijing, China. We used to call Beijing Peking, of course, all the time. Well, did the university retain the name Peking when the rest of the world decided to start referring to that city as Beijing?
Yeah, the college was called the Beijing University for a long time. So Peking University has become the name of the university. So no matter what you call the city, I guess the university decided to remain its original name as Peking University.
Okay, and help me a little bit more with this, but I understand that the reason that we say Beijing is because that is actually the correct Chinese pronunciation of the city, and Peking was really what the English, the British, called the city. So I wonder why there's a compelling need to refer to the university as Peking University. Do you have an opinion on that?
I think Peking is the original calling of the university, the original spelling of the university in, you know, I think in 1920s. So that's the original spelling of the university after China is first get into the modern society. So Beijing is used after 1949. The new China has been established. So I think the university would like to follow its tradition and to use its original name since it was created.
All right. Well, I'm told by contacts that I have in Taiwan that there is a pretty good relationship between scientists in Taiwan and in the mainland. Do you have any liaison with people in the scientists in Taiwan too?
Yes, actually, in our department there are some researchers from Taiwan, so we had great collaborations, and also I have some colleagues and some people working in the same field, either from Taiwan or currently working in Taiwan, and we have a lot of communications in our research.
Well, Dr. Liu, you're absolutely fascinating, and I wonder what's going to be the takeaway for this when you make your presentation to the scientists at the Metricon Conference October 26. I know your talk is eagerly awaited because I hear much about we're so lucky we're going to have Dr. Jin Liu speaking. But what do you want the takeaway to be? What's the overriding message you want to drive home?
I would say computer is very powerful in biological research and drug discovery. By using the current methods and developing our new computational methods, we have the great potential to reduce the time and cost to develop the next generation drugs to cure many diseases. I think that will be my take-home message for the audience.
Okay, a lot of hope for the future in curing diseases using genome manipulation and or what you call genome editing, and that's what we have to look forward to. Can you put on the thinking cap for a minute? Look down the road, maybe 5, 10, 15, 20 years or so. You know, as rapidly as things are moving. In this field, what do you see the future like?
As you said, the world is changing very fast, and the future, you know, everything for the future, everything is possible. So I would say in the future, computers, including the computational microscope or AI, the artificial intelligence, could be used dramatically in the pharmaceutical field, and also the genome editing will play a great role in the pharmaceutical field, so that a lot of diseases could be cured. I think in the 10 to 20 years, we probably could conquer many diseases.
Oh, that is so exciting, Dr. Liu. Well, Dr. Liu, we're about out of time in the first half hour, but I want to bring you back briefly in the second half hour before we say goodbye for maybe some Chinese wisdom. Nobel laureate Steven Weinberg from the University of Texas at Austin has said that anything we can do to limit the hold of religion should be done. It may in the end be our greatest contribution to civilization. Wonder how you feel about that. Do you believe religion is limiting our advances in science? So we're going to take a quick break and come back in the second half hour with some parting words from Dr. Jin Liu. Okay, as we walk to the break at the half hour, we're going to pause at the door of the Den of Strangers, where we keep locked away all of the wisdom of mankind. Who in the Den of Strangers will we meet today?
Anne Montgomery. Tomorrow is always fresh with no mistakes in it. Yet.